We started the week going up the mountain of the Transfiguration, where we got a glimpse of glory, glory that is still to come, a glimpse of a glorious future. In Jesus' case, of course, his glory is revealed in the resurrection and even more fully manifested in the ascension. In our case, our glory is not revealed until the other side of death. But it's certainly something to look forward to. At that time, and in the Jewish world in general, before the time of Jesus, the idea or the understanding of what happened or what will happen after death was very vague. It was clear that everyone dies and that death cuts us off from the land of the living. There was a kind of an assumption that we live on, but in the land of shades, in Sheol, which strikes anyone as being not as good as being alive here. And one of the things that the Israelites understood was that once they're dead, they can no longer worship in the temple, they can no longer join in the worship of God or offer sacrifice. In today's first reading and today's psalm, there's a reflection on the difference between the just and the unjust, the good and the wicked. And it's clear that it's better to be good than to be bad, because the good are rewarded and the bad are punished. But it seems that the focus is on reward in this life and punishment in this life. The idea of reward and punishment is certainly valid. But we know from experience that sometimes good people don't get what seems to us like a just reward in this life. And it certainly seems that wicked people are not punished, at least not punished in the way that they should be. So we know many people who lived wicked lives and gained huge fortunes and they died rich. Whereas there are good people who die poor. So it doesn't quite fit for us. And the Old Testament thinkers wrestled with this. How can it be that a good man suffers and a bad man flourishes? Think of the book of Job. Now, Job was at least striving to be a very good man, and he was suffering terribly. Although in the end of the book of Job, he gets all his rewards. So this question of what happens and how to reconcile the justice of God with what we actually see happening in the world. Well, the problem, of course, is that we can only see this world. We can't see beyond. That's where today's gospel gives us tremendous insight. This is the great story, the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. We see their situation in this world. The rich man is rich and he's enjoying being rich. Lazarus is poor and he's suffering terribly from being poor. Famished, sores, begging, dogs licking him until he finally dies. Now, according to the conventional wisdom, that's because the rich man was good and that's why he was rich and he was rewarded, and Lazarus must have been bad because look at how he was suffering. It's convenient to think like that, but it's not true. It's not correct. We don't know that, though, until the other side, and that's what this parable tells us. What happens after death? And then we see what happens. There's this complete reversal of fortunes. The rich man is in torment, and Lazarus is enjoying comfort. Complete reversal. So it's not at all what it looks like in this world. Now, that helps us understand how the justice of God can reign when it seems as if it doesn't reign here. But it's also very challenging to us, because we certainly prefer to have our rewards here. That's our natural inclination, that if we do something good, we should be rewarded here. And if we do something evil, well, we shouldn't really be punished, but if we are, let's get it over with, and then we go on to goodness again. And it's very easy to judge people for how they are doing now, which is always going to be limited, if not inaccurate. At least Christianity gives us this vision beyond. Now, you know, other religions, they, I'm thinking especially of Hinduism, where the idea was, or is, what you're experiencing now is the result of what you did in previous lives. Before you were incarnated in this life, you were in a different life, and if you did bad in that life, well then, that's why you're suffering now. If you're flourishing now, it's because you did something good before, so you're getting your reward eventually. And if you're getting your punishment, well, it's your own fault. That's why in that religious way of thinking, there's not that much incentive to help the poor, because they're just getting their just punishment. That's what they're for, because they weren't very good in their previous lives. Anyway, we don't think like that. We don't think like that because Jesus has revealed that the reward, the fullness of the reward, comes in the next life. This parable of the rich man and Lazarus is actually a kind of companion to the parable we heard last week of the Last Judgment. Remember Matthew 25, we read it last Monday of the first week of Lent. In that parable, everyone sees what reward or punishment they get based on what they did in this life. So it wasn't a question of how they were rewarded or punished here, but in the next life. And remember, both the sheep and the goats get surprised at how this works. When did we ever see you sick? Or when did we ever see you hungry? And that's when Jesus gives that extraordinary revelation. Whatever you did to the least of my brothers, you did to me. Whatever you neglected to do to the least of my brothers, you neglected to do to me. Well, here we have the rich man neglecting to do good to Lazarus, who is right in front of him. Lying at his door, the parable says. Well, this puts a big obligation on us, not only to do good, but to not omit doing good. Not only to avoid evil, but to make sure we don't omit doing the good that we should do. Many commentators have pointed out that there's nothing in the story that says the rich man did anything wrong. He wasn't a bad man. He didn't commit crimes. He wasn't rich because he stole or he was corrupt. But he didn't do what he should do, sin of omission. To not do for someone in need who we can help, that's sin of omission and has serious eternal consequences. Lazarus is identified by name, and the rich man has no name. People usually point out that that's the opposite of the way it is in the world. Rich people, everyone knows their name. Their name's in the newspaper, on top of the, you know, Fortune 500 and all these things. Whereas poor people have no name. No one knows who they are and no one cares. It's opposite in the next world. But another insight into this no name thing is that we can't identify ourselves as easy with Lazarus because we know who he is. The rich man is not name, so he represents us. We're all the rich man. That's the challenge of the gospel. We're all the rich man, and we're all being told, don't neglect to do for others what you can do now. Don't omit to do good to others when you have the opportunity now, especially someone who's right in front of you. So that's the challenge. And it's a challenge that is presented to us now so that when we die, we won't be taken by surprise. The rich man thinks that if someone would just come back from the dead, warn people, then they would listen, especially his own brothers. And Abraham's response to that is, if they don't listen to Moses and the prophets, they're not going to believe even if someone rises from the dead. Now, this is certainly parable that makes us look forward to when Jesus rises from the dead. And we know that when he rises from the dead, he reveals not just eternal justice, but he reveals divine mercy. He comes to bring mercy to sinners, even to those who abandon him in his passion. So we see that there's more to the story than reward and punishment. There's also mercy. But the main point of the parable remains. If we're not accepting the warning we have now, well, how much more do we need to be converted, to repent? So let us not condemn ourselves to being the barren bush or the chaff driven away by the wind. Let us receive the warning, receive the lesson of charity for the poor, and then we can ourselves be like fruitful trees planted by the water.